Tonight we are talking all things monolith monsters.
We are talking about rocks.
That's right. For those of you that are new to the program, essentially the podcast is broken into three different acts. The first act, Orin and I will tell you what we are excited about, both old and new in the horror genre. The second act, we will introduce our central question about the movie, and then we will drastically run really quickly from that question and mostly talk about things that we think are interesting.
I mean, I think 2/3 of our slides are actually about the question for once. Yeah. So maybe, you know, maybe.
Well, to be fair, too, since you started writing the questions, we do a much better job of answering it. So, hey, it's cool. It's great. And then we'll give you some movie recommendations. If the monolith monsters were your kind of thing, some other movies that may fit in that theme or genre or have rocks in them. As that was my given.
Other movies that contain rocks.
That's right. That's right. So thanks for staying with us tonight. And, of course, always thanks to the Stray Cat Theater. We unintentionally matched. But, man, the Stray Cat, as you can tell by the trailers and everything else, just does rad shit all the time. So thanks so much for Andrew and Stray Cat for continuing to host us now. Yeah. Into it's coming up on a year and a half or almost
something like that. Yeah,
yeah,
I don't.
A long time. So. All right, Andrew. All right, so what are we excited about?
So I just recently got this book called Cabarets of Death, which is by Mel Gordon, the like one other person in the world who is me, who is familiar with Mel Gordon would be because he also wrote a book about the Grand Guignol Theater.
Oh, okay.
He kind of wrote the book about it, so I was very excited about this. It's about these three cabarets that opened in Paris in, like, 1892 that were all themed around, like, death and the afterlife. So there's one that, like, sort of looks like a catacomb, like a, you know, burial chamber. There's one that's supposed to be heaven, and there's one that's supposed to be hell. Almost everyone has probably seen the door to the one that's supposed to be hell. It's like a big hell mouth, like a big face with two doors in the mouth and everything, and all around there are demons and things, and it makes the rounds on the internet time to time. But anyway, it's a really cool book that's got like actual photographs from these old cabarets and things, and it's just really interesting.
Yeah, that's cool. So, it sounds a little bit like a book about Halloween,
yeah,
pop-up bars.
It's essentially like I wrote a little bit on my blog, actually, about, like, how, yeah, these sort of, like, obvious successors of these are, like, modern pop-up bars and things.
I love that. That's cool. That's
great. Yeah, so.
Awesome. I'll check it out. So my thing I'm super excited about, every year I teach a class to high school kids in the summertime. Longtime listeners are probably sick of me talking about it. But I essentially get to teach high school kids all about horror movies, and it's great. And we watch, like, 20 movies in 21 days, and the werewolf movie I almost always show is Ginger Snaps, and there is just a really great release from Second Sight that's got, like, a bunch of additional, extra scenes and extra interviews, along
nice.
With all of the old stuff all compiled into what is a beautiful, beautiful set. But if you are a Ginger Snaps fan, man, it has all of the movies, including the weird...
Oh, it's the whole series.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Ginger
okay.
Snaps Back, I think, is the like the prequel.
Yeah, I don't even remember.
Yeah.
They're all real weird, though, after the first one. Like,
because
yeah,
they have the same actresses, but it's supposed to be like back in the 1850s. A whole strange, strange vibe, but I love those movies, something fierce. So you got to check that out for sure.
So my other one I picked was this movie called Monster of the Opera, which I saw on the, like, Danza Macabre box set from Severin. They did this, like, box set of, like, four random gothic movies from Italy from, like, the 60s. Monster of the Opera is this very, very weird, like, fever dream of a movie. It's kind of a take on Phantom of the Opera and kind of a vampire story and mostly just doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, it has full dance numbers in it. It's kind of great.
As one should have.
Okay. And it's on Tubi also. So if you just want to watch it, it's you can just watch it on Tubi, which...
This is our regular Tubi shout-out.
Yeah.
It's the best
Tubi is the best.
You don't have to pay for it. So, yeah, you got to love that free stuff. So my last thing, I'm actually giving away a copy in the giveaway today, is The Glass Scientist by S.H. Coutinho. I hope I'm pronouncing that name correctly.
I bet you're not.
I'm 100%. Bet I'm not. But you can tell by the cover, it is like certainly a graphic novel, but it kind of presents this alternate version of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Okay.
And it is goddamn beautiful. And I'm not even necessarily into that, because say it's anime.
Yeah, it's like a quasi-manga style.
Yeah, and that's not even my vibe, but man, I loved every single minute of it. And from like the press stuff that they sent out, it's going to be a series. So like this, there's going to be a lot more of it. But yeah, if you're an anime fan remotely, or if you're a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde fan, as we both are, like that should be your thing. So it's
nice.
Very, very cool. Andrew. All right. So yeah. What the heck is this thing? What genre is the Monolith Monsters? But most importantly, the question I ask you every time, why this big rock movie that we just watched? What?
You gotta believe me. You're gonna think I'm blind.
Rocks, Joe? Towers of rock crashing down and then growing up again?
Yeah. Yeah.
Perhaps a part of the process is the absorption of silica, taking it right out of whatever it comes into contact with, like
human beings.
Just like Ben. Bodies are turned to stone.
What was this amazing power that could turn people into stone, that could suddenly turn inanimate rocks, stones, monoliths, into growing, spreading, expanding monsters, threatening to engulf whole towns and cities, to bury all civilization under an immensity of weight beyond all calculation?
The natural slope of the valley floor is bringing them right down here.
And once they break through to the other side of the mountains, there'll be no stopping them ever.
Look, all we're asking you to do is save her life.
I can't cope with something I don't even understand.
Ready. Hit it, now!
So, I wanted to do a movie from the 50s, but we never have. Like, not since we've been posting here. I try... as I'm sure anyone who comes regularly knows, I try to program movies from all over the place, like time-wise, because otherwise, if left to my own devices, we'd just watch shit from the 60s all the time, and no one wants that but me. So, you know, I try and do just, you know, every decade, basically, and we've never done a 50s movie since we've been here, so I wanted to do something, and I wanted to do something kind of representative, but not, like, really obvious, so I didn't want to do, like, them... or, you know, any of the really sort of big 50s movies. And this one's just so fucking weird. Like, it is so weird that there's a movie about killer rocks. And so I figured, like, that was a hook I could use, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like one of those kits that they gave away in, like, the 50s and the 60s. It was like a chemistry kit gone wrong,
right.
You know.
Yeah. Grow your own crystals, only they grow really fast.
Yeah. But I will tell you, when you were like, hey, Tyler, we're going to do this killer rock movie, I was like, oh, we're going to sell so many tickets to that thing, and it's going to be fascinating.
Yeah.
But then I watched it, and I was like, oh, shit, this is so like so many other things that I think both of us get excited about, and we don't necessarily even have the same taste in horror movies all the time. But this thing kind of has a little bit of everything.
Yeah, it's kind
of
great.
And before we get into that little bit of everything, though, we have our first giveaway of this evening. So,
yes. I need the other half of the tickets.
Oh, all right.
We are organized. I'll be right back.
Yeah, hey, we're always organized. This is our jam. I can get up here and vamp about the Simpsons and how they're really into Killer Rocks too. I got nothing.
I got a lot of mileage out of this Geode episode, though. I'll tell you what. All right, so our first giveaway. The last three numbers are 020.
Is that anybody?
Is that anybody who's here?
Oh, hey, we got a winner. Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
What? Ah-ha-ha. All right.
Love it.
So you
win
a copy of Creature from the Black Lagoon on VHS.
Hey, can't go wrong with that.
Some old fantasy and science fiction magazine. And a geode.
Ooh! And your own Killer Rock, man.
Yeah, don't get wet.
Don't let it eat after midnight or pour water on it. So, okay, so, rocks, baby! This was in the original slide, and we were like, it's too perfect. So,
yeah, the original slide was like this, like, you know, teach your students about geology or whatever slide program, and there was just a slide that just said rocks.
Yeah, and then underneath it, what we're going to talk about today, yeah, it was like, so, you gotta leave that in.
Yeah.
For sure. So, yeah, let's start talking about real life rocks that do kind of what these things are doing in the film.
Yeah, so when I was doing research to actually have something to talk about this film, other than just, like, bullshit about its weirdness, I discovered that there are these things called trovants, or something, I don't know how you pronounce them, that are in one specific spot in Romania that actually do more or less what the rocks from the Monolith Monsters do. They do grow, and they grow when they get wet. The difference being that these grow incredibly slowly. Like, they have grown a matter of inches every 1,000 years or so. But it is still really weird. They're the only rocks that get bigger instead of smaller as time goes on, like, without adding more rock to them. Like, normally when rocks get rained on, they get weathered, they shrink.
Sure.
But these actually get bigger because they absorb the minerals from the rain, we think.
Okay. I buy that. As a non-geologist, that makes total and complete sense to me. Yeah. So, sure.
So, yeah. So, that was just fun. And they're weird because they're in one specific spot, and that's the only place in the world they exist.
Well, of course, because the people in the town, like, put a bunch of salt water around them.
Right?
So
yeah.
Never,
yeah. You know, I mean, of course, you know.
I will tell you, it's not in a slide here, but the first thing that I thought of, right, when I watched this movie, I had read this article. It was like a really glurgtastic article about these rocks that supposedly move, right? And they leave trails and all that kind of jazz. And I don't know. Like, I think there is this almost ancient kind of historic relationship that we have to animating rocks and these things being really terrifying. And I'm not exactly sure the origins of that fear, other than they're big and heavy, and when they fall on us, they hurt us.
Right. I mean, right? Yeah, rocks will totally kill you if they fall on you.
Right.
100%.
So it's easy for us to manifest them as horror movie villains. I buy that. All right. Okay. How do they grow?
So when I watched this, because I'm a big nerd for these kinds of old, you know, shitty 50s, 60s movies, obviously. The thing that stuck with me about them is, like, how the hell did they actually make the monoliths? Because they're kind of amazing looking.
Yeah,
like,
they're great.
And the growing effect is weirdly effective, and I couldn't figure out how they did it. Like, watching the movie, I was like, how the fuck did they actually make those? So I dug around for a long time to figure out how they made them, and it turns out they're made out of balsa wood. And so they just, like, they make the monolith out of balsa wood, and they, like, fuse a bunch of pieces of balsa wood together to make it look like a crystal, and then just push it up through a hole in a tabletop, basically.
Okay.
But, like, the trick is that they glue them together in such a way that they will fall over and shatter like they do, which is super weird. And then also there's a camera trick where, like, you'll notice if you watch it real closely, they're always growing toward the camera, which makes them look like they're getting bigger at the top. They are a little bit wider at the top than they are at the bottom, but they can't be too much because they have to push them up through the hole. So they just use a camera trick to make them look wider at the top and so on. But yeah, they're just balsa wood, and they just fall over and shatter for real, just pushed up to the top of a table. You can kind of tell they're balsa wood in the flood scene because they float, which kind of rocks wouldn't do, probably.
I mean, maybe rocks from outer space might.
Maybe, yeah.
I mean, there are some of those, I think, when they fall and they break apart, and it's like clearly some movie magic shit going on.
Right.
But, yeah, like, I think that's a good opportunity to talk about how fantastic this film looks generally, right?
Yeah.
And we're using a lot of those cinema techniques and tropes that we have talked about in the past, including, you know, making kind of miniature replicas and all that kind of jazz. But for a movie made, what year did this come out?
57.
Dude, I like, pretty remarkable. Right? Yeah. For the special effects, the practicality of it all.
Yeah, I mean, the monoliths, again, in my opinion, still look great. Like, they look fantastic.
Yeah. Well, and I remember I was talking to Oren about this in the lobby before the show. I used to love this show on Nickelodeon called Mr. Wizard, right?
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Wizard was this, like old man, and he always had, like, weirdly nurturing relationships with, like, adolescents, right? And they would do science experiments. And there was a science experiment where they grew, like, time-lapsed sugar crystals, right? And they built off of each other. It was like somebody watched that experiment and was like, okay, but what if they grew to the size of a house and oddly turned you into a rock?
Yeah, that feels like
a... If you ingested it, I was unclear.
They said it just had to touch you. Just had to touch you. It apparently sucked all the silica out of you if it touched you. I don't know. Sure. As rocks are known to do.
Okay.
Yeah. So this quote is actually from Tarantula and not the movie we just watched. But this movie we just watched does have a quote very similar to it when the, like, newspaper guy is just like, you know, things just happen all the time in the desert or whatever. Like, and I wanted to use this to kind of talk a little bit about the way that the 50s exotified wherever the hell the movies were set. And so, like, usually it was the desert because they were filming in California. Occasionally it was the swamp. A lot of the old Ed Wood, like, movies, you can get these people having weird rhapsodic discussions about how terrible and weird the swamp is. In the beginning of the end, it was Illinois, which is definitely a place known for being really weird.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, like, you every now and then each movie will have, like, one dude, usually a scientist, give this weird little soliloquy about, like, you know, around here, strange things just happen to kind of hand wave whatever bullshit they're peddling in the movie.
But what I do appreciate about that, right? This movie, like, the villain are just the rocks, right? Like, that's it. And I'm cool with that because what you see is this manifestation of all kinds of other horror movie villains being good guys, right? You have the Department of the Interior, who are the government guys. So they're a little bumbling, right? But, like, they mean well. They're well-intentioned, right? You have scientists, who I think are much maligned in a lot of horror films, that are like, no, here's how we're going to solve this, right?
Yeah.
And you even have police officers and, you know, journalists now, which tend to be, like, kind of our villains or whatever. And I just appreciate a movie where we glorify those things again instead of necessarily making them bad, you know, and simpler times maybe.
Yeah, I mean, well, the 50s were very much like civic responsibility movies. You had a lot of, like, everybody has to pitch in and do their part.
Right,
and,
right,
like,
the paperboy bit.
Yeah,
it's great.
And you also get the very weird, you can't blow up the dam to save everyone. Someone owns that.
I love it. Well, and that's the thing, right? A movie that I think leans into that social cohesiveness, especially in times right now that feel like that is waning. And it's like, yeah, man, like, blow that damn up. Screw Monsanto or whoever it was that built it, you know? They got plenty of money. We're not worried about it. Even if the governor tells us not to.
Remember? Yeah. I mean, you know, the movies in the 50s were all, not all, but a lot of them were like this. And they were, you know, very much like products of being right after World War II, right? Sure. Where it was very much like everybody pitch in, grow a victory garden, you know, everybody do your bit. And you still get a lot of that in the movies up into the 50s, which, you know, Korea was going on then and all that stuff. So,
yeah. Well, I think it makes total sense. I love how the only scientist that movie treats poorly It's the poor meteorologists. It's like, man, the geologists are like talking shit on the. They're like, get to it, man. All right, yeah. We just want to know, is it gonna rain? Like, poor guys that like to talk about the weather.
Right, you know,
they're hosed by everybody.
He was doing his bit.
Right. Next slide. Okay. So what is this movie? When we talk to about it to our friends, what are we gonna say it is?
All right, so we broke it down into, I initially had three, Tyler added some on me, but we broke it down into a few possible subgenres, because I think, like, normally in the 50s, it's pretty easy to be like, this movie, like, we didn't have a lot of slipstream shit in the 50s, it was pretty easy to be like, this movie is definitely a monster movie, or whatever. But this one's a little weird, because the monsters are rocks, in no small part. So, like, I put down, you know, a few of the sort of dominant subgenres. So there were big bug movies. Big bug movies were, as the name implies, they were atomic panic movies. Oh, no, keep it here. They were atomic panic movies that were about, you know, fear of the nuclear bomb, basically, right? And what the after effects of that would be, because we didn't fucking know yet. And so pretty much always they were, you know, someone was doing some atomic testing and now bugs are really big, hence the name. The first one of those was Them, which is a big ant movie. It's also the best one. It's really fucking good. But there were a bunch of imitators that came out within just a few years. And this is essentially one, for all intents and purposes. We'll get to the details of that in a minute. Then there were also alien invasion movies. That was kind of the other big genre in the 50s, which were sort of Red Scare parables about communism most of the time. But, you know, they were always like invaders from outer space, came to Earth, were usually implacable, couldn't be reasoned with. See, you know, War of the Worlds, kind of the prime example.
And sometimes they look like us, right?
Sometimes they do look like us, yeah. Then there were disaster films. Disaster films weren't really a subgenre yet in the 50s. There were disaster films before the 50s, but, like, the subgenre as we know it today really codified in the 70s with movies like Airport and
Poseidon Adventure
and that kind of stuff, yeah.
Towering Inferno. Oh,
yep,
yeah.
Yep.
That's great.
And then you can go ahead and talk about the two you had.
I mean, come on, man. I think especially as of late, you can probably tell I love my modern horror. Warren is my go-to guy when it comes to anything, you know, really before 1980. So, like, high desert films, like the spookiness of the desert have always been, like, something that I've been drawn to. And I think this film, at least with the idea that, like, ew, it's the desert, things can happen and all that kind of jazz, lends into that idea. That the desert, despite the fact that it is a dry and sunlit place, is still kind of spooky.
Yeah.
So I'm like, hey, it could be a high desert film. And then the last thing is the kind of modern phenomena of, like, global weirding, which is either by alien presence or by the shit that we're doing. We've changed the climate. We've changed the way things are. And as a result, weird things start happening.
Yeah.
Like, rocks start attacking and we in turn turn into those things, which immediately made me think of the masterpiece Annihilation, which is one of my favorite books and movies of all time. So, yeah, it's good. Good stuff.
Okay, so I only made fancy slides for the three I made because Tyler added the others later. So
yeah, that's true.
Tyler doesn't get fancy slides.
Yeah, and I already talked about mine. So.
No, you can stay. You can stay. No, not so far. Back. What are you doing? Back to bugs.
Big bugs.
So yeah, I made fancy slides for my three. So these are kind of the three we're going to sort of mainly focus on. So big bug movies, like I talked about. This one, I always call it a big bug movie, even though it's about rocks. And even though it's not about atomic panic. And the main reason I do that is because it feels like one, like it hits all the beats of one. Especially the, like, traumatized little girl, which is a direct lift from Them. If anyone who has seen Them, the sort of opening scene, the introduction we get to the ants is this little girl who's wandering in the desert. She's completely in shock and can't speak. And, you know, when they trace back where she came from, her family's been killed by these giant ants. I think she even, like, got, like, the acid from the ants in her system or something, so I think there's even an analog to them, like, trying to cure her, but it's been a little bit since I saw Them, so I'm not going to swear to that. But you know, the...
It's a kaiju film, right?
Yeah, like, I mean, it's a specific subset, and it predates the kaiju film as we know it. Because the kaiju film as we know it came from Godzilla. Godzilla came from The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms. Like, it was almost a direct remake of The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms. Just with a specific atomic bent, which The Beast from 20,000 Fathoms didn't have. But these do. But yeah, they tend to be in a small desert town. There's some sort of outbreak of large insects. And the big difference between them and a kaiju movie is that a kaiju, there's almost always just one. But in a big bug movie, there's always shit tons. You know, there's just scads and scads of them. And they're going to swarm over everything. And if they break out of the valley, they'll wipe out the whole world or whatever. Like the rocks in this movie. So yeah. That's my argument for big bug movies.
All right. I'm convinced so far. All right. Now make the argument. What an alien movie, perhaps?
So yeah, the argument for the alien invasion movie is that it's from outer space. I mean, the short answer. Like, they come on a meteor, they're from outer space. Again, it's another popular genre in the 50s. Like the alien invasion movies, the rocks are implacable. Like, they just sort of move forward inexorably and wipe out whatever they come into contact with.
That's fair. You know, like, even with the, you know, the Klaatu variety of aliens, they're at least organic, right?
Right.
I was like, you know, like, this is, again, not to claim that it is a global weirding movie from the 1950s. That'd be crazy. But, like, there was almost an inevitability, like this is just this is cold nature. It's just taken over, and shit, your time's up, or whatever. That, I don't know, maybe a little bit of both or something.
Yeah.
So, all right, disaster movies, maybe.
Yeah, so disaster movies, you know, I mean, there's an obvious parallel where this is essentially a natural phenomenon, right? It's not a thing that can be defeated, although they do defeat it with salt, inexplicably.
I hope we left my slide.
You did, yeah, it's there. But, you know, it's not a creature, it's not alive, you can't kill it, it's just going to happen bit by bit. And, you know, you have to evacuate the town ahead of it, you have to do this, that, and the other thing. You know, so see, it's less in line actually with the disaster movies of the 70s, which tended to be about, like, surviving the disaster, than it is movies from the 90s, like, Armageddon, or...
Oh, yeah.
Or The Core, or movies like that, where it's like, oh, we're going to all figure out a way to stop this natural disaster that's happening by some elaborate science plan.
Yeah, like, the plan here is, like, let's explode a dam and run into a salt mine. But it takes very little, right?
Right.
And I appreciate...
But it does take a lot of them figuring it out, because they don't think to put the salt in for, like, hours.
Yeah, hours and hours until it's almost too late. All right, so...
We're jumping around. What's happening?
Okay. So, yeah, is it a, first off, will you go to the next slide?
The previous one. Previous one?
Yeah, that one.
Because
essentially,
Tyler's very proud of making this one. He made this one. It's very good.
But, like, they're slugs, man. At the end of the day, you're like, if we could just pour enough salt on them, they would wither and die. So, I appreciate giant rock slugs, which is what I'm going to refer to this movie forever as.
And this is maybe a good time, actually, to talk about the fact that we mentioned it a couple of times jokingly while we were watching it. It is very clear that Joe Dante saw this movie at some point. Like, the rocks multiplying when they get wet. Like, that Gremlins definitely just borrowed that.
Oh,
100%.
Yeah.
Like, right. Joe Dante borrowed shit from these old 50s. He loves these movies, and he borrowed shit from these all the time. And I'm reasonably willing to bet that that was borrowed from this.
And here's my monthly pitch to go to the Overlook Film Festival in New Orleans, where Joe Dante shows up all the time to screen his movies and to talk to people. And we cover it for Signal Horizon, the website that the podcast is a part of.
Is it in New Orleans again?
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. So if I see Joe Dante, I'm going to ask him if he has seen this movie.
Corner him and ask him about Monolith Monster.
That's right.
He won't think that's weird at all.
the rock movie? Yeah, yes. Yes, Mr. Dante, yes, I want to talk to you.
That's what I want to talk about.
All right, Andrew, go back to that previous slide if you would. There you go.
We'll find it eventually. So yeah, what do you all think? Which one is it?
Is it a big bug movie? You know, applause if you think it's a big bug movie. Okay.
All right.
Alien invasion movie?
No one likes that one. All right, disaster movie.
I think disaster movie. Okay, is
disaster movie. I think it's the winner. Yeah.
Hey, very good.
It is an early days disaster movie.
I love it. All right, so I think with that we'll skip one more. It's time to our last giveaway.
For another giveaway. So this giveaway is very special. A friend of the pod is Dominique Lancies, who runs the House of Silent Graves, which makes these like weird plush gewgaws to go along with old weird B movies like this. And so they made for us a one of a kind monolith monsters pillow.
Yeah, love it.
It is one of a kind for now. If you want to buy them in the future, they will be available. But so we're going to begin with that, and also some other stuff, that Glass Scientist's book that Tyler mentioned, and like a check disc of The Witch, which is definitely on theme, 100%.
It's great. It's another Second Sight feature, so lots of bonus features on that if you are a Vivitch fan. So.
Vivitch. All right, last three numbers are 019.
Anybody 019? All right.
Oh, wow. All right.
Going once, going twice. All right, somebody new.
019 bailed on us. Okay.
Shame on them. They'd be one pillow richer.
All right. How about 022?
Yay! Yeah! All right.
You get your very own Monolith Monsters pillow.
Love it.
To commemorate the event.
Look at that. Thanks for coming and congratulations. All right. Andrew will move us into our third and final act here. So, I almost picked, it's like Jerry Bruckheimer. It's the Sean Connery Alcatraz movie, just to be an asshole. The Rock is, yeah.
I like that it took you that long to get the title, even though the title was the whole joke. That was good.
I know. I'm not great at delivering that shit. But I figured I would try a little bit harder. So, the first thing that honestly I thought of, especially with the, like the asteroid attacking, was either Color Out of Space, which is fantastic, in the new adaptation I really enjoyed. But I have a soft spot in my heart for this puppy here, you know, Stephen King playing the weird moss-covered Jordy Verrill, you know? Like, it's great. So it's from the original Creepshow. It's fantastic. It's probably my favorite segment of all of them.
Honestly, like, the Color of Space actual story, as opposed to any of the movie adaptations of it, is actually like a really good analog for something like this, because again, it's a monster that's inert.
Yeah, right.
It's literally just a color. And like there's no, you know, there's no intelligence behind it. It's literally just a radiation, essentially.
Yeah, so. That's cool. All right.
So I picked The Blob. Both of mine are from the 50s. Both of mine are essentially, you know, big bug, alien invasion, 50s nonsense movies. And The Blob is, you know, it's this very, like, unintelligent-seeming, just spreads, big, you know, blob. Seems similar to The Rock's.
Yeah, no, it's great. I love both versions of The Blobs. The 1980s version of The Blob is one of my absolute favorite movies of all time.
And
so.
the town in the 80s version of The Blob looks almost identical to this town. It's so weird how similar those two towns look.
Well, and you live relatively close to the Aztec Theater, and I think like the whole town looks like the Aztec Theater. You know, like I love it. It is just that really specific,
very 50s, very 50s backlot small town vibe. Yeah,
I love it. Yeah. All right, so I was thinking, if you were showing a double feature, right? You show one movie where rocks eat people, and then you show a movie where a thing eats rocks, right? So
sure.
I picked The Neverending Story. It is a stretch, but, you know, hey, any reason to, you know, shout out one of my childhood favorites. So talk to us a little bit about Tarantula.
So the other movie I picked was Tarantula. I was going to pick a movie called The Magnetic Monster, which I think is from earlier in the 50s. I don't remember when exactly. That is also about an inert monster. It's about, like, an isotope. But it's actually not much fun. So rather than suggest people go watch a movie that isn't very good, I picked Tarantula. Tarantula is maybe the big bug movie that feels the most like Monolith Monsters. It's very much a sometimes in the desert things just happen movie. That's in fact where that line is from. It's about like scientists doing weird science-y crap out in the desert in a small desert town, and a big spider wanders through and eats some stuff. But also, like, there's mutant people, which kind of harken back to the and the people who are like turned to stone in this, who are not very mutanted, but a little bit. Like, there's, you know, makeup effects anyway.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was my pitch for Tarantula.
Yeah, big spider experiment. So.
But now, if you want to watch one of these big bug movies, Them is the best one. It's really good, legit, actually good.
I like it. Well, before we reveal what we're talking about in December, Oren, where can they find more of your stuff?
So I am Oren Gray online. It's getting real weird online these days, and where the hell I am seems to vary. But for now, I'm kind of everywhere. I'm on all of the weirdly decaying, half-uninhabited ghost town social media platforms as Oren Gray, and also at orengray.com.
And this is my plug. I'm at all of those places too, but Signal Horizon is what keeps the lights on. So if you like reading, media coverage, if you like reading about movies, check out Signal Horizon. We also host a variety of different kind of spooky pop-up events around Kansas City, cover film festivals and all that jazz. But yeah, man, I think you can follow both of us. I'm at Ty Unsel, and I think you're at Oren Gray at Letterboxd.
Yeah.
Which seems to be a lovely place to find other people that like movies, that have very strong opinions, a lot of which I disagree with, but it's okay. Like, there's not the kind of public vitriol that I...
It's great to read. Like, there's some really great, really strange, freeform, like, personal essay reviews happening on Letterboxd.
People pour their hearts into these, like,
they're
thousand words.
They're very weird, yeah. And really good sometimes.
Yeah, and sometimes not.
Yeah, sometimes not.
But that's okay. All right, Andrew, final slide. So, this is what we are showing next time.
For Christmas, although after Christmas, on December 28th, we will be showing Dead of Night from 1945. It is not quite the oldest anthology film, but it's real close.
I know nothing about it. It looks like there is a ventriloquist dummy.
There is.
I love it.
It has, one of its segments is essentially sort of the ventriloquist dummy segment. Like, it's the one from which all other spooky ventriloquist dummy stories spring. Dead of Night is a really great British anthology film from 1945. It is like one of the first horror films made after the war in Britain. Horror films were banned in Britain during the war. It is the birthplace of a number of tropes that have been reused in movies later, but we'll talk about this more on the episode. It is also the origin of a actual theory of cosmology in physics.
Oh, all right.
Which I think it's the only horror movie that can make that claim.
Nice. Okay. All right. So we get giant rock monsters and now cosmology.
Sure.
All right. We're all about the pseudosciences here. The horror podcast.
It's real science.
Yeah,
just.
I believe you. All right. Well, until hopefully we see you in December, thanks so much for coming out, and class dismissed. Thanks so much for coming out.
Thank you all for staying.